Trendstorm.
Welcome back to Trendstorm. Now let's take a look at the liberation of Benghazi. Libyan General Haftar announced the liberation of his country's second-largest city and de facto eastern capital, which interestingly coincided with the liberation of Iraq's second-largest city of Mosul around the same time. Libya, just like Iraq, has been mired in violence ever since the U.S.-led war on the country 6 years ago destroyed all semblance of stability in the formerly prosperous nation, and Benghazi regrettably became a buzzword for bedlam during this period. Not only was it the epicenter of the hybrid war against former leader Muammar Gaddafi, but it was also the scene of a deadly terrorist attack against the American consulate, which resulted in the brutal killing of the U.S. ambassador and an explosive scandal for the Obama administration. Suffice to say, no city represented the evils of war in Libya more than Benghazi did, just like Mosul came to be associated with Daesh over the past couple of years after its assassinated caliph declared the so-called Islamic State there in 2014. So it's symbolically important that both cities have just been freed from the terrorist clutches. The most immediately striking difference between the two, however, is that the entire world applauded Mosul's liberation but has yet to show the same enthusiasm in welcoming Benghazi's. And this is probably because of the domestic circumstances behind the latest victory. Unlike in Iraq, where the internationally recognized military and its allied militias freed the long-captured city from Daesh, Benghazi was liberated by General Haftar and his unrecognized, self-declared government based in the eastern Libyan city of Tobruk. The international community has yet to reach a clear consensus on how to resolve the ongoing Libyan civil war, despite a landmark deal being agreed to by both sides in early May. And there's still a lot of uncertainty about the direction that this domestic conflict will go, as well as what its potential resolution will look like. These concerns seem to have dampened the euphoria behind Benghazi's liberation and made the city take a backseat to the international media coverage over Mosul. Be that as it may, ignoring an issue won't ever make it go away. And the on-the-ground traction that General Haftar has gained after the Battle of Benghazi makes him the most decisive military political force in the war-torn country today, and could potentially earn him the kingmaker spot in deciding Libya's future. So folks, starting off our discussion today, we are joined by Mr. Ali Moussaoui. He is a war correspondent covering the liberation of Mosul in Iraq. Hello, Ali.
Trendstorm.
All right, Aliyah, the world is celebrating the liberation of Mosul, but mostly ignoring the liberation of Benghazi. So why do you think that is?
Well, as you say, the world is celebrating. That means the world media is covering the celebration of the liberation of Mosul. Anyone who has watched the way Daesh, or the, as it's known in by its English abbreviation, ISIS, everyone has seen what they have done in Iraq. The media has highlighted that for from the beginning, from the first day, the terrorists went across Iraq and they started killing and pillaging and wiping out the history of Iraq, the cradle of civilization. So ever since then, the world has seen what those terrorists have done. But in Libya in general, they haven't highlighted what the extremists have done. All they have done is that they are shown that there are factions who are fighting among themselves, and they called it the first civil war and then the second civil war. And they haven't really highlighted how the extremists are in Benghazi or what they have done in Benghazi. But as for Mosul, they have highlighted that in details. We have seen massacres, we have seen the killings, the enslavement of minorities and so on. No such thing has happened. The media has ignored a lot of the crimes that have taken place in Benghazi and in Libya in general. And one of the main reasons for that is because the way the so-called Libyan revolution started. NATO supported extremists who, Muammar al-Gaddafi, the former leader of Libya, he himself said that Benghazi is full of extremists and no one did anything. And when he actually sent an army to stop those who were apparently called revolutionaries by the media in general, as well as Western politicians, and obviously Arab politicians, specifically Gulf Arab politicians, they sent a NATO to stop his army. And this basically what unfolded the civil war in Libya, and arms were flowing in. Every major countries or regional country, international powers, they supported one side over the other. Even after the killing of the U.S. ambassador to Libya, very little was highlighted in terms of the extremists in Libya and in Benghazi itself. So that's one of the main reasons why, yeah, the people are celebrating, and there has been a huge coverage. You know, there are huge differences in coverage of what went on in Mosul and what happened in Benghazi.
Okay, I see. Well, the liberation of Mosul was made possible because of heavy coalition support, while General Haftar freed Benghazi with considerably less, and mostly depended on his own forces to do the job, even though Benghazi was occupied for a few years longer than Mosul was. So, Ali, why was there such a multilateral military disparity between these two cities' liberations?
Well, it's back to the first point that in Mosul, when terrorists first took over Mosul the first few days, there were some Iraqi politicians and some specifically Arab media. They were praising the presence of the terrorists at the time, and they've called them even revolutionaries against the Iraqi government. But this didn't stick. Such a term didn't stick because everyone knows who, whoever knew at the time who Daesh were. Everyone knew what they were doing in Syria at the time. So the term revolution didn't stick to Daesh when they took over Mosul and when they tried to take over a few other cities across Iraq. In Libya, on the other hand, there were still doubts on, I'm talking in terms of media coverage, there were still doubts of in terms of whether they were actually terrorists. I mean, they call them, they say in most of the reports that covered Libya, they've mentioned that the Islamist parties, along with ISIL or ISIS, they never highlighted that extremists actually existed or controlled a lot of areas in Benghazi, and they controlled most of the weapons that were given to them by NATO allies. They didn't highlight that a lot, as well as the politicians completely ignoring the fact that Libya was their failure. The war that existed in Libya was their fault, their responsibility, and this was one of the main reasons why, when the Iraqi army wanted to fight against Daesh, there was full international backing. While in Libya, they're still not sure which side to back. Although there is a national effort now and attempt to create a unity government and so on in Libya, there are still different sides supporting different groups. And this is likely to continue unless someone like General Khalifa Haftar is able to reclaim more power by defeating these extremists.
Okay, well, Ali, we have just about only 1 minute left, so I just want to ask you real quickly, how significant of a turning point are the liberations of Mosul and Benghazi in determining Iraq and Libya's fate moving forward?
Well, there's one correlation between the two, is that strong armed forces has kept the countries united. In Iraq, Mosul was about last when Daesh took over. So everyone was thinking that this is the end of Iraq as a country, as a state, and we're expecting to see a divide. That was back in 2014. Similarly, in Libya, that was the same. Same thing was being said, that the eastern part of Libya is going to create its own federal state, its own independence, and so on. But the strong military presence, the united military effort by General Khalifa Haftar, as well as the united effort by the Iraqis, allowed the armed forces to reclaim Mosul. And this has prevented any kind of division in both countries. We will see that both countries would most likely remain as long as there is strong army to back the political process.
Ali, thank you very much for providing your insight. The fact that you're on the ground in Iraq makes this all the more valuable. Thank you very much. Now we're going to swing over and speak to Mr. Petri Krohn. He's a Finnish political commentator and co-founder of Citizens Investigation into War Crimes in Libya. Hi, Petri.
Trendstorm.
All right, Petri, many people have lauded the liberation of Mosul as the beginning of the end for Iraq's war on terror. So do you think that the liberation of Benghazi will be seen in the same light as regards Libya?
Liberation is a very loaded word. But I guess one can safely say that peace has returned to Benghazi after 6 years of freedom. Every group in Libya is more or less a proxy for some outside force. Haftar's Libyan National Army was set up and trained by the Western powers to balance the Islamist brigades that were originally the core of the Libyan revolution of 2011. But I think the Qatari diplomatic crisis may be as important or even more important in ending the second Libyan civil war. than the events in Benghazi. Qatar has been the main sponsor of the Muslim Brotherhood and other Islamist militias, Islamist brigades in Libya from the very beginning of the Libyan Revolution. Qatar's ally, Turkey, has been supporting the infamous Misrata brigades. And I believe that this support may now be ending.
Okay, well, how important of a role then will General Haftar assume in Libya's conflict resolution process following, you know, the successful Battle of Benghazi? And what effect will this have on influencing the great powers' attitude towards ending the country's civil war? What do you think, Petri?
Well, the Qatar diplomatic crisis again. The United States has sided with Saudi Arabia against Qatar. Egypt and the United Arab Emirates have been militarily supporting Haftar's the Libyan National Army, and as have the French and I believe some other Europeans. On the other hand, Haftar made this what looked like a state visit to the Russian aircraft carrier Kuznetsov in January this year. So it seems that he has the support of both superpowers, both the United States and Russia, while the other side, General National Congress and the Libyan Dawn movement in Tripoli is fast losing their international support. Qatar has been the main sponsor of the Tripoli-based General National Congress, the other one of the three competing governments in Libya. As a result of the crisis between Qatar and Saudi Arabia, Qatar will certainly have to give up something. And I don't think that they will be giving up Algeria. They will not be giving up their sovereignty. But I believe that they will have to give up on Libya or their interest in Libya. Saudi Arabia and her allies have published this terrorist list. And it contains five names from Libya, two of which were the key Western tools in destabilizing Libya in 2011. Abdulhaki Belhaj, and his one-time deputy, Mahdi Harati. Belhaj was the leader of after the NATO invasion, he was the leader of the Tripoli Military Council. Harati went on to Syria to launch the civil war there. These were Western proxies supported by Qatar, and I think they are now seen as international terrorists, which is a good thing.
Okay, then what I want to ask you then, in light of everything that you spoke about, Petri, with all these very interesting combinations of patrons and proxies, and especially regarding what just happened in Benghazi, what's your projection for how the Libyan civil war will unfold across the coming months? And do you foresee more of a military or a political solution being imposed?
It's clear. Some sources, well, I believe that this seems to be true, it's claimed that the Libyan National Army, Haftar's army, lost over 5,000 men in the 3 years of battle in the Battle of Benghazi. Over 5,000 soldiers dead in Benghazi alone, which is a very, very large number compared to the claims that the First Civil War only had some 30,000 people killed in total. But it means that the Battle of Benghazi has been straining the resources of the Libyan National Army. And after it's over, Haftar is militarily much stronger and able to act also in Western Libya. And in fact, what has happened this year is that the LNA has been gaining control in the West and now controls well over half of Libya. I believe that something will happen in Tripoli in the near future. One of the two governments which are based in Libya, may simply disband themselves as a result of some kind of international pressure or agreement. But even if there is some political solution is reached, it will not end the fighting. And the various Islamist and revolutionary brigades that still control much of Western Libya, they will have to be militarily defeated.
Petri, thank you. That was a very detailed analysis of what's happening and what could potentially come in the future in Libya. Thanks for joining us.
Trendstorm.
Now, folks, if we think back on what Ali and Petri both share with us, we can see that, yes, there are some comparisons between the liberations of Benghazi and Mosul, but there are also many contrasts. First and foremost, the fact that the mainstream media has been focusing on Iraq in order to deflect from the disaster that Libya has become. And secondly, we also see that the Libyan war is far from resolved. There are too many different dynamics there. There is no international coalition at play as well. So therefore, the cameras don't go there. No one wants to show you the destruction of Benghazi because it raises questions about why was it destroyed and captured by terrorists in the first place. Alrighty, folks. Well, if you want to sound off and share what you think about this, please send us an email at radio@sputniknews.com or find us on Facebook. Stay with us.